the question is like, why should I care, right?
Yes.
I think one thing that would help, honestly, I have a couple of questions, but the first one is like this analogy around, like if you go into like a hardware store and you need some light bulbs, you understand what the light bulbs do, put them in your light socket, they give you light. You don't really care too much about how the light socket is wired. You don't really care too much about how the switch works, right? You just go to the hardware store, maybe even take the old light bulb out and you try to buy one that matches it perfectly. And then you screw it into the ceiling and that's it. You don't care. Now, let's say you go to the hardware store and while you're buying light bulbs, you walk down like the tool for plumbers, right? Like, you know, you're just walking down the aisle and you say, no, let me just check out these tools. You see a plunger, you're like, I think I know what that one is because I've seen it be used in a video, right? Like, I think I know what that is, but I don't have that problem, so I'm not going to buy one, but I know what it does. But then you see this other tool that looks like a long piece of metal that wraps around and you look at it and you just say like, what would you do with a long, thin piece of metal? Like, I have no idea what to do with that. Now, you could beat yourself up and say, I'm not leaving this aisle until I figure out what this long, thin piece, it's like 100 feet. I need someone to ask. So you find someone and say, hey, what is this? And they just say like, basically it helps you unclog pipes. And you're like, well, could you show me how to use this? Like, well, do you have clogged pipes? You're like, well, no, but now that I'm on this aisle, I think I need to learn all of these tools. It's like 300 of them. And the guy is sitting there like, listen, there's a lot of tools. If you're a plumber, a lot of these things are really valuable for you. But if you're not a plumber and you don't want to be a plumber, you can ignore most of these tools. When it gets this bad, these tools are very complex to use. And you should be lucky that you don't know what these things are because that means you're going to be spending a lot of money. Okay.
Yes.
So, but a plumber goes down that aisle, it's part of their trade, it's part of their profession. They better know how these tools work because someone will call them to fix their problem and not ask them specifically what tool to, they'll just describe their scenario. The plumber will say, oh, I know what tool to use. They'll go to the hardware store and they'll know what they're looking at when they go down that aisle. And they'll be able to distinguish between a new product designed to fix a solution versus an old product, like a plumber, right? A plunger is super simple. But sometimes you're going to need that very fancy thing to unclog a 100-foot thing.
True.
They're gonna know what to do with those two tools. So the last thing I'm gonna say there is, when you look at the cloud native world, it's like that. It's like the aisle for plumbers in the department store. You look at that big graph, it's just a bunch of tools on the shelf. They may mean nothing to you because you may not have any of the problems that they're trying to solve.
Hello and welcome to Sartastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
If you're using something like Heroku or Lambda or App Engine or Cloud Functions, a lot of those things are just built in, right? It's like going to the hotel. If there's a problem with the toilet, I'm not going to try to fix it or call a plumber. I'm going to call the hotel staff and say, hey, the toilet isn't doing what you should do, right? That's it. I'm not going to go try to learn any tools, right? So that's a trade-off. So I'm going to stop there. I just wanted to have you have that mental context of you don't have to care about all of these tools. Just know that they're there for a reason. Now, there's nothing wrong with learning all of these tools, right? You can if you truly want to, but everyone has to make a choice in life. Do you want to learn everything possible or you learn the things that you actually need? And that's the trade-off we're making, right? So people get frustrated with that. Oh man, I don't have time to learn everything. So you feel like you're behind, right? So I'll stop there.
Now for us, it's like, oh shit, now we have to actually talk to these guys who talk about all these fancy tools. We've got to communicate to that guy who's walking down the aisle who has no clue. So how do we bridge the gap? Because we kind of stuck in the middle in trying to make that, you know, that connection between the layperson who's going to use it and somebody who's like so techie. And that's why we can't bring the message out, because we are the ones who are expected to bring the message out through our design and through the written word. And that's where the problem is.
All right. So that's good context, right? So I think every developer has this problem with themselves, right? So I'm a developer and I may have experience with, let's say, two of the cloud native tools, but not all of them. For example, I'm learning OPA, it's the authorization framework.
Policy validation.
Yeah, it has policies. You can design them, you can use them. I've never used it before.
That's what the dev guy just told us.
Right? I've never used that particular tool before, but I get the gist of it, right? And now I have to sit here and research it for 3 days, looking at videos, experimenting, throw it away. And then maybe in 3 days, I'll feel that I'm like 25% there until I really use it in practice, right? But now I got to use it a few more times. I have to break it. I have to troubleshoot it. And then it may take me years to really be proficient at OPA if I actually care. Actually, I'm only learning it just to use it for a situation, but I'm not going to be an expert like I am in maybe Kubernetes. So I'm making a trade-off here. But for even me with some experience, it's still gonna be 3 days on that one thing, just for this one time. And then I'm pretty sure I'm gonna have to revisit it again and again and again throughout my career. So I only have room to do a few of those at a time. So I think in a tech writer, you blow this out of proportion, because now somebody is saying, oh, the thing we need to teach people needs to use four different things. And you're like, they need to know all four. It's like, yeah, they won't know R1 until they learn these other three first. And you're like, damn. So it's already hard to explain the thing we built and understand, but you're telling me I have to explain to them the precursor? It's like, yes. Yeah. And that's the unfortunate problem in the tech industry, right? So there's many ways of doing this. You say, hey, our policy engine is based on OPA, and here's a link. And then let their tech writer deal with the foundational work of what this is, why it's the case. Sure. And then they will come back to your site and say, well, here is the Rego policies we're using in our tool, but we're going to try to make things a little easier for you and just give you a higher level language that's a little bit decoupled. So I think the challenge in tech writing is, are we exposing too many of the lower level details to even our customers? Because then what is our tool doing for them if it's just exposing these low level details? Maybe we should have a wrapper on top that hides some of these low level details so we can articulate, we're just trying to have a policy that protects bank accounts. So maybe we have our own thin wrapper that we have to explain to people. If they want to know how it works, we can say there's this complicated system underneath, but you don't have to learn that because our product embeds that sophistication and then gives you a way of using it on top. Like, this is why we build UIs. This is why we build all these things, because we don't want every user in the world. So I think in the cloud native world, since it's so new, most people using the cloud native technologies, they do what we call leaking the details, right? They're not even doing much for anybody. They're just taking the technology raw and then they're just leaking the details all over the place. So this is why everyone is being forced to understand it. You in the middle, the end user, and this is just a problem. It's not that everyone in the world has to learn everything. That's a fallacy in my opinion. So you're dealing with a couple of things. We're leaking details, and now you're asking me to describe the stuff that we're leaking because we're confusing everybody, even ourselves, right? So I'll stop there to see if you kind of have more questions on this, but there is nothing wrong with the way you feel, because this is not sustainable, right? Like, imagine explaining the internet to people, but then they have to understand how to build a cable modem from scratch, how to make a coax cable to screw into the wall, what power. It's like, this is what we're asking people to do. It's like, no, when you go to Comcast, they say, hey, what service do you want? Buy this modem with this picture, this model number, screw it into the wall with a few twists, you're online, right? That's how it's supposed to be.
And how do you start those conversations? The reason I'm specifically asking this is because I've got two sets, we specifically have two sets of customers. One is the layperson for whom you're advocating, right? You want to make it easy, not have cognitive load. And then there's a developer, the other audience, where you're talking about, they come onto our platform and they're talking about all the CI/CD and autonomous cloud management, things that we barely understand. And we have to write for that audience as well. So how do you draw the line, and how do you actually explain it enough for the techie to understand another techie? And I understand this part where you talk to a non-techie, like folks like us, where you talk about the business. But what do you do when you're talking to guys who are developers? How much can you leak, and what should you not leak?
Yeah, so I think one thing you got to make sure is that you are technical. You have to believe that part. Because if you don't believe that part, you're going to believe that maybe you're not qualified to answer this question yourself.
We do that all the time.
Trust me, this mental roadblock is going to hurt your work. Seriously. Okay. So the first thing you have to do is, when you get off this, you have to make sure that you start working mentally, never to say, we're not the technical piece, we're not the technical. Seriously, if you cannot do that mentally, because if you're like in a professional athlete and you say, I'm not a professional basketball player, you don't even have the confidence to compete. So that's the first one. You have to mentally get over that one. You are technical. So that's step one. The thing is, you're so technical that you can learn and describe more technical stuff to other people. That means you're even more technical than the average person. Even some developers are not very technical either. They go to the internet, they copy and paste what they see, they put it in the app, and they hope that it works. And if it doesn't work, they turn to people like you to explain to them why it doesn't work. Do you understand why you're technical now? You have to understand. Okay, so now that you're technical, you say, okay, here's my challenge. When I'm speaking with my development team and say, let's say we build product X. Okay, what is a product your team builds, if you want to share? You don't have to, I can make up one.
Actually building a very weird one, which uses OPA, by the way. It's a compliance engine for a fintech. So it talks to two customers. One is a bank and one is the developer. So they need to build apps, like all these venture capitalists, right? They're kind of getting all these fintechs on board. So we're building platforms for them. So we have to talk to two sets of customers. Yeah, two sets of customers.
All right. So I get it. So it's like sometimes people are building like bank in a box or compliance in a box. And I'm just going to make up a thing that's not even that close, but we'll get close. So now I'm going to provide ideally some high level, because the reason why they're paying my money is that we're going to save them time. So ideally, I might have a set of checks that make sure that PCI compliance is achieved, various things that regulators will ask around control. Only this user can see their bank account. Like, this is a very obvious thing. This user can only see their bank account unless they're a custodian for another bank account. Like, this is a high level rule. So you would think in my product, I would build something that looks really, really nice, like high level, that says, you know, what accounts does this user have? And once you tell me that, I'll build a policy engine around it. You don't have to learn anything else. So that's the highest level. And maybe your product already has something like that, right? If I look at your product docs, you already have a very high level way of configuring these policies. Maybe you don't even show people that it's OPA in those docs. And you say, hey, we support these policies out of the box. They're already pre-built. Here's how you use them. Give us the bank account, give us the customer ID, and we tell you if they can actually see the account or not. That's a really nice, easy to use product. And then that's going to be for your getting started guides. This is going to be for just a casual developer. And you're going to target, they're a peer developer of your platform interested in what's available out of the box. Now let's go to day two. Now, this is the more advanced guy. I want to create my own policies. Well, maybe the product that your team is building doesn't have a good custom policy engine. So guess what they have to do? They have to leak the details of OPA now. Uh-oh, since we don't have a product that will extend it, we have to leak. Now here comes the problem. We can't control the ease of use. We can't choose the UX. We can't control just enough of the product for our users. Now we're giving them too much. And now we have to say, look, we're about to give you a battleship now when you just want to go on a cruise. Let me tell you how this works. This is OPA. It has Rego. You can write these custom policies, give it to us this way, and then put this on top. Then you can use it. So now the developer has gone from day one to day two. And now everyone's confused. And now you're at a crossroad. Am I responsible for reteaching everyone OPA, or do I link them to OPA site? But if I link them to OPA site, it doesn't give the context for our product, right? So how far do you go, right? So one thing you may do is say, hey, here's a high level overview of OPA. Go check it out, come back here. And now I'm going to describe to you the context in which we are using OPA, right? OPA has 1,000 features. We concentrate on 10 in our product. These 10 are critical for what our product does. So we're going to teach you the fundamentals of the 10 parts of OPA. We cannot teach you all of OPA because we don't use all of OPA. We only use this portion of OPA. We've made some high-level modules to make sure that you're not writing Rego from scratch. Maybe you're importing our plugins to give you a head start. So that's how you go back and forth with your development team to say, hey guys, we cannot have people writing Rego from 100% scratch. Me trying to write these docs is 10,000 steps to get anywhere. And they say, okay, you know what? You're right. Maybe we should write some libraries that even though they're still using Rego, they're importing our finance compliance libraries and then starting from there. And you say, okay, now let me take another stab at the docs. Now they're becoming easier. So now my first step isn't teaching them the basics of the Rego language. Now my first step is import our Rego library that already has some high level things you need to understand. And then they can start making custom policies. Now my doc goes from 1,000 to 200, right? But see, at that point though, it takes a lot of you to learn not just how Rego works, that it's too complicated, and then how to pare it down to just the basics that your customer needs to know, right? And then I'm saying one more thing here is like, now when it's time to troubleshoot, your leaky abstractions are now causing you problems, right? Rego is having an issue. Customers are seeing weird Rego error messages because the developers are leaking them everywhere. And then the customer's calling saying, hey, I'm using your product. What's this Rego thing? What's this OPA error? And now you're like, hey guys, I can document what these things mean, but why are we even showing this to customers to begin with? We should be capturing these errors and then showing them more of a user-friendly error. So that way they can say, hey, authorization denied, error evaluating policy, not OPA.
Doesn't mention OPA at all.
But this is how the tech writer is very important in this process. It's not always documenting all the crap. Sometimes you got to go and say, hey, this is too confusing to even discuss amongst ourselves. That means there's some opportunities in a product to make it easier.
I actually want to field one of the questions from my friend, because he's actually been asked to create the developer workflow and he doesn't understand any of the tech stuff. So I don't know how would I explain when a developer starts talking to him. They go in deep, right? So how do you back them off from a person who's like a designer? How do you say, hang on, like I'm used to guys, you know, just talking. And I'm like, okay, just go on. As a writer, you kind of get used to it. But as a designer, I find it very difficult for them. They're like, no, this is creative stuff. He's blocking my creativity. I've heard that quite a lot. How do you kind of say that?
Yeah, so when we say technical, to me, there's an element of being technical that also has creative. Usually the most technical people are the most creative, right? You have to get to that level, seriously. Because if I know how something works, then I'm free to be creative. Yeah. If I only know how to use a hammer, I may not be very creative. I may not know that I can use a hammer for a different purpose. But if you really know how a hammer works, you can be creative. I can throw a hammer at someone because I know that
I could utilize right? it. And yeah,
it's creative. So creativity to me is almost a demonstration of mastery of some technology, because people will say, wow, I never thought of using it that way. It's only because you're creative. It's only because you're highly technical that you know what to do beyond its original intent, right? So that's where we would say the bar for technicality is high. So a lot of times when people have trouble explaining something, they don't know it well enough. Just because they know it doesn't mean very much. It's only when they know it well enough that they can explain it in very simple terms. That's how you know the degree. So when we say, you know, when we talk about people's mastery of technology, when someone can tell you how it works in one sentence, you say, wow, this person knows what they're talking about. There are some people, like I said, that copy and paste from the internet. Nothing wrong with copy and pasting from the internet, but it may mean that they don't really know how it works. So they say, oh, it's this, that, and the other. They use all these big words and terms like, oh, you don't understand what you're saying because you can't explain it to me simply. That's why I need to help you. So in that case, I say this. The first thing I would do is I'm going to walk you through a scenario. I have this new tool and I'm asking you to write the instruction manual for the tool. What's the first thing you're going to ask me?
What the hell is it? And why? I always ask you this. What the hell is it?
It's a tool for tightening car parts.
Tightening car parts. How is it relevant to me?
Yeah, I mean, you're the person that works here, right? Good. So you work here and you're going to write the manual for me, right? We just hired you today. But here's the thing. We have a tool that tightens car parts. What's the next question you're going to ask?
Oh, so you've hired me. You're actually having that conversation with me.
Yeah, with you.
Okay, so you've hired me. Okay, and you're saying, what are you going to ask? I would actually ask you first, what is it? Yes. Could you show me how this thing works first? I always usually ask for a demo.
That's it. Done. So if I'm this other person that you're talking about asking this question, I say, hey, what problem are you trying to solve? You only have two sentences. Tell me what problem you're trying to solve, or show me the problem and then just solve it. And you're gonna watch the engineer say, oh my god, I gotta come back because I gotta show you
that.
Yeah, so hey, come. So here's the thing. When I used to manage, I used to be a director of engineering. I used to manage the engineering team, the QA team, the PM team, and the docs team all under my belt. And they all still work in like pods together. So one thing I did to reduce the burden on the documentation team was I made the developers do pre-docs. Don't worry about style. Don't worry about tone or language. But they had to write down a copy and paste tutorial on how the feature works. You have to write down, the problem we're trying to solve is car parts are loose. Well, that's too vague. Brakes are loose. And when the brakes are loose, people car crash because they can't stop the car. And brakes have a very unique screw at the caliper that needs a special tool to tighten it. If you over tighten, it's going to be stuck and it needs to be just right with torque. Okay, so the problem is that the brakes need to be tightened in a certain way using a particular tool. And then here's the tool, right? It's designed to address exactly that. And then here's a video of how to use the tool, right? This is when you tighten too much. Here's what the tool does. And here's how you know you just got it right. If you just show me that as a tech writer, then I can look at this and say, all right, let me go through it myself really quickly. I felt it with my hands. I understand the use case. I've seen it work. Maybe I try something weird to see if it breaks. And then I may come to you with a few more questions, but I'm not starting from zero. And I'm putting the burden on the engineering team to say, look, if you wrote the feature, you know what it takes to work. Because the worst thing I hate when you're writing documentation is they say, oh yeah, just run this command. And then you run the command and it's like three flags missing. It's like, dude, how come you didn't tell me that the three flags are missing? It's like, oh yeah, you need those three, it won't work. It's like, come on, man. Like, you're wasting my time. This is not the important part. So making engineers do the pre-docs can save everyone time, because the engineer, usually when they go through the first pass, they may say, damn, this is too complicated. Maybe I should make this a little cleaner. This flag doesn't mean the right thing. It's not communicating. I'm explaining too much. And then when you get it, you have a head start. And now you can focus on the user journey. Okay, I'm looking at this. I think the output needs to be a little bit more clear. We need to explain these flags. So then you just sit down with the engineer and say, what does this flag name mean? It says dash, do something really, really cool. Can we name it what the cool thing is? Oh, okay, dash, don't lose my data. Better. Yeah, so I would say that case first member.
I guess it's a, I don't know. I don't actually, probably it's also a fear of Will I be thrown out? Are you not learning fast enough? That's happening, right? A lot. Like, are you not learning fast enough for us to, or are you always playing catch up?
That's a good question to ask yourself. You know, how long does it take for me to ramp up on new things? Some things are more complex than others. So my challenge will be asking those the right questions and showing progress incrementally, right? So I don't want to spend 2 months writing a technical doc. I might just start with asking, what is this stuff? Write that piece. Then ask the engineers to do a pre-doc where there's like a tutorial. I look at it, ask the right questions. I'm trying to make that loop so tight that people always see output from me. Hey, this person seems to be able to write good output within about a week or two. Their style, their technique is good. And then when I see it in that format, I as an engineer can say, oh, okay, I see where you're going. You didn't explain this section part right. It's part of the draft process, right? It's like a reporter. A reporter is going to go report on some situation they've never been in. So they have to go pay attention, ask questions, research, investigate. Same thing, right?
Same thing, yeah.
And then you try to make sure that everything lines up, you show your work, you make sure people come and review to make sure that you have the facts correct, and then you go and write a story using the facts. And then as a reporter, you may go and investigate a whole new world that you know nothing about, and you gotta go through the same process again. So I think the quality is like, does the artifacts that this person produces around their area, which is the technical writing, not necessarily becoming an expert on the thing that they're writing about, but do they have the right format and flow to extract things from the engineering team, make sure they incorporate what the user needs, and then produce quality content in collaboration with the eng team? That's the measurement. The measurement is, now do you know this complex thing as much as our developers? That cannot be the measurement. Before we go to the next one, do you believe that it's okay not to know stuff? Do you personally believe that?
I do, actually, because there are a lot of things I always learn along the way as a person. Like, I remember the first time I took an MMA class and I sucked at boxing, but I was good at grappling and BJJ. And my coach said, you know, hey, just chuck the boxing and MMA thing. Just get to grappling and BJJ. So that's when I realized that, hey, I don't know this stuff. So I'm okay with that. And I kind of enjoy that. But I know we are kind of judged in a way. I don't care, because I've been happy always to be able to say that, like, hey, I don't know this, that's fine. But not all my friends do. And I feel somehow they feel they're catching up and they're not feeling like they can learn fast enough. That's why I kind of wanted to say, what's the big deal
but
with this?
Every developer I've ever met is in the same boat. Every developer I've ever met, even at Google, I do these things called empathy sessions. And one of the sessions I did was, these are people who work on the core of Kubernetes. You understand? The core. And all I asked was, you have 45 minutes, just deploy this simple app in Kubernetes. That's it. No tricks. You can Google all you want. You can go into teams of four. Remember, they work at Google on Kubernetes, and most of them cannot deploy the app. But you have to understand that, like, there's a lot of people that don't know everything about everything. Even people that work at Cisco, they may know about all of the networking in the world. And then you say, hey, I want you to connect this container IP with this other container IP in this other cluster. Just because they know networking doesn't mean they know how to make that work. So every engineer has this. Some are just better at hiding it.
So how do we tackle this as an industry? Because the buzz is so high that everybody needs to look like they know it, but not everybody knows it, and it's kind of okay.
Yeah, I think part of our industry is making sure people know what we do know. Hey, I'm a good tech writer. Here is my published work. I've been working here. I'm responsible for these docs. They look pretty good. Our customers agree. So that way they understand, like, this person is good. And then sometimes we do have to explain and say, hey, one of my powers is not knowing everything in the world, but being willing to learn what I need to learn when I need to learn it, and then taking that information and doing what it takes until my customers also understand. That there's a lot of skills in that pipeline. And I think that's the part where people need to know about you. Say, yeah, this person, let's put them on this, because if we put them on it, they're going to ask us the right questions. They're going to ask us the questions our customers are asking, and they're going to be very patient and distill the information that we don't have to answer this question 1,000 more times. That's why this person is here. They're not here because they know all the answers. They know how to get the answers. They know how to keep asking until they become clear, and then they know how to articulate it using whatever web technologies or documentation frameworks we're using to get the word out. That's what I'm good at. And sometimes you have to remind people, that's where my strength is. So, but that comes with time, and you just have to give yourself room to get that time. That's it. I mean, how do we fix it as an industry? We won't, because this is a psychological human problem, right? This is something that's beyond just our industry. I think almost most industries have this kind of problem. And honestly, the people who prevail are people who have enough self-confidence to keep doing it anyway. Like, startup founders are not all brilliant. Some of them don't know what the hell they're doing. They just raise some money and they're hoping they can hire enough smart people fast enough to build a viable business. And that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But the thing is, they know that there's more to this than just typing on a keyboard all day. That's it. So perseverance. And then sometimes we have to have conversations with people to give them confidence, like with your friend, and say, hey, here's why we're good at our jobs. And even if the other people don't believe it, this is how we educate them over time.
Okay, then since I have you here, I wanted to ask you about this whole SRE thing, something that I've just heard. I've started hearing about it. I wanted to understand, not from this perspective of cloud native, just generally I've heard about it, like CI/CD and SRE. How does that story go, and what do you see beyond SRE? What is that?
I think, so you talked about like martial arts. So if someone told you, what is fighting? Yeah, high level, what is fighting?
To me, it's actually physical exercise that requires a lot of discipline, is what I felt. Because it's more, it's less about showing your power. It's more about knowing when to not show your power.
Okay, so that for you, there's a practice.
Yes.
Right? Fighting is a practice. So if you're a professional boxer, what's fighting? So think about a boxer. Fighting for them is something they get paid to do. It's a job. They train. They exercise. They learn the technique. They fight on a specific day. They're going to get paid. There might be titles and rankings. There's judges and scorecards. If I say, what is fighting for the average person? Well, fighting might be confrontation, that someone comes to them, tries to take something from them. They may see fighting as that. So now there's different types of fighting. Some people learn karate. Some people learn how to box. Some people learn jiu-jitsu. Some people learn different ways of fighting, right? So there's a practice towards fighting. There's a culture around fighting. Some people fight only with weapons, so bullets and guns. Mm. Different people have different views of fighting. So this is getting somewhere, because when you say, what is SRE? We need to understand the higher level concept. When people write applications and deploy them, they need to be managed. This is the fighting, right? I deploy an app, it crashes. Someone has to bring it back up. I deploy an app, the customer says it's too slow. Someone has to make it faster, high level. So that's the fighting. When we write apps, they need to work. They need to be fast. They need to be making expectations. It seems like our apps are fighting us. They don't work sometimes the way we think they should. They're crashing. They're just doing weird things. They're too slow. Now we have a confrontation. So now how do you want to practice? So there's different ways of practicing. 20 years ago, they would say you're a system administrator. And then instead of boxing gloves, your practicing would be a laptop with a SSH. You log into the server, you run commands, you look here, you look there. You do defense, where you guard against too many people hitting the app too fast. You do a little bit of defense. Sometimes you do a little bit of offense, and you do some things like OPA and policies. As a system administrator, you may restart the application every 2 hours because you know it's going to fall over and there's no time to fix the code. But you're just practicing. These are system administration techniques. And then maybe you bring in tools like Puppet, Chef to automate some of the practice. Now, recently people are saying SRE, site reliability engineer, because we're so used to websites. Now we can start to use this idea kind of like this site. I'm now the Gmail expert, and I'm going to practice keeping this app fast, meeting expectations. So as an SRE, I'm going to practice in a different way. I'm not going to log into every server because I'm fighting a battle that has millions of servers spread across the globe. There's no way I can log into all 1 million. Those methods of fighting don't work anymore. I have to do something new because my challenger now is coming with different methods. If you try to do jiu-jitsu to a person doing grappling, or a boxer that tries to fight someone grappling, it doesn't work out well.
Right? I know that. I've got punched a lot.
Right? So it doesn't work out well because now you have to say, okay, this is why there's rules in professional bouts. You can't kick in boxing.
Yes, you can't do this.
Right? Because it's not going to be fair because no one can prepare for that. So those are the constraints. So for SRE, they're dealing in a world where there's so many servers, so many users, that you can't use the same techniques that work only when there's a few users. So the SRE mindset is that we have to practice for that world. This is why they use different tools. They need to have observability tools. I just need to see the signals because there's too much noise. I need to start looking for signals. And then when I find a signal, I have to do more data-driven experimentation, meaning I may go to the code and say, hey, what if I do compression to make what the users are passing me smaller? And maybe that's going to do less congestion on the network. And maybe the slowness will go down. So let's try that first. And then they try it and it's working. And then they roll it out to all the apps. And now they're starting to see things get a little bit better. Then observability tells them by the metrics that it's getting better. So the philosophy and the approach is different. The fundamentals are the same. There are apps that need to be managed. There is like this war going on. How do you want to practice dealing with it? So when somebody says SRE, you say, okay, these people have a different practice towards managing applications. So if an SRE asks you, how do I manage your product? You know what they want to know. They want to know, what metrics do you have? What is the performance? Because these are the things I care about. Then they may also ask you about their tools. Say, hey, the way I look at metrics, I use a tool called Prometheus. Do you have support for Prometheus? Because as an SRE, this is how I practice. That's it. This is how people practice. So it's not like, oh, SRE, there's exactly these 8 things people do. It's not true. Google does SRE one way. The bank does it a different way. If I only have one server, I might do it a different way. It's just a practice. Now, different people practice with different sets of tools. And over time, you'll start to understand how they practice. And you'll be able to speak their language. That's it. So that's it. That's how you stay on top of it. So I reduce everything down to a practice. I don't care about the buzzword because fundamentally it's the same thing. We're fighting. This person's boxing. This person's doing jiu-jitsu, but they're fighting. So if you told me there's a new martial art out there, it's like, okay, somebody has this thing to help fight. I'll look at it and say, show me some moves. I was like, oh, that won't be very good in fighting. You're going to get beat up by a lot of people. I see what you're doing, but I don't think jumping and running in circles is going to be very effective. You can show me anything. I could probably ask you 3 or 4 questions and start to understand what you're trying to do. Give me 2 or 3 days. I'll see if you can do it effectively or not, right? Because it's not really about learning the tool. That's where it all gets confusing. When you just look at these tools, you'd be like, why would I care about this tool?
Yes, why do I care? A new product in the market. That's Loki. I'm like, what the hell now? There was Grafana. Now there's Loki. I'm like, oh dear Lord.
But to me, what I do is I step up and say, what is the meta problem? Okay. You want to do it a different way. Hey, I went over here and this guy started kicking. So now I want to learn kickboxing because I was only using my hands at first and they have a different take on fighting because they ran into a new problem. So the low-key stuff might be, usually they're addressing some problem. So I usually ask the question, like if I'm familiar with saying one tool, I'll say, well, could you tell me how it's different than this other tool? And then I usually scope the argument and says, you're right. These tools are about 80% the same, but we do 20% things different because the old tool wasn't good in this case. It wasn't good in this case. It wasn't good in this case. Oh, okay. Maybe if someone has that problem, they'll look at your tool, but fundamentally these are the same.
It's actually a very nice way to look at it. Makes it easier for me at least to absorb the whole thing. Thank you so much.
But this is the power of the analogies and the story, right? This is how humans actually learn. It's not about trying to tell people to make room for some brand new concept. If we can't link it to an existing concept or an existing problem, no one cares.
One of the things in learning when I actually help develop, right, we follow something called as constructivism, where we activate your prior knowledge and then help you scaffold. And I think that was something that actually makes sense to me now that you tell me. That it's easier for me to actually start doing that, activating what's already known, and then maybe have that journey.
Yeah, I want you to be confident in your foundation. You are technical. You have a process. Your core skill set is taking new things and making not only yourself understand, but other people understand. That's a very technical thing to be able to do. So it's unfortunate that maybe everyone doesn't realize how technical and how important that kind of skill is, but they've been a beneficiary of that skill because that's how everyone learns. They've learned it this way. They've asked a question to Google, how to do XYZ. Luckily, there was a technical person there willing to write down or share their ideas in a way that they could consume. And now they have the knowledge. You're just trying to do that for everyone else. How come they don't understand it? That's the life cycle of how knowledge works, right? That's how it works, right? So you play a very important part of the role in that. So there you go. Trusting your fundamentals, and then always step back and just apply it to something you do know. And this is why I love trying analogies, because it really helps me personally understand. And if I can't understand to that level, I keep asking questions until I do.
But that means a lot because it's coming from you, right? For us to, like for me, I just go and I just talk about it. And then guys laugh about it, but they're like, it's okay, she talks, so it's okay. But it's more important for me, for my friends who don't talk about it. And that's where I am actually trying to figure out how to open those lines of conversation.
All right, so the big takeaway here is this has nothing to do with seeing cloud native technologies.
Yes, not at all, actually.
There's nothing, that's not the most important thing. It's not about getting smart with that, because guess what? In 5 or 10 years, the new thing will be coming. That will never stop.
So there's always a new way to fight.
That's right. Exactly. That will never change. So I think here's more about, we're technical. We have our own skill sets. We need to find comfort in that. And then we need to be able to make sure that we understand that this stuff will never stop. So we have to find confidence that we'll never be at a point where we know everything. So take comfort in knowing that I have an ability to learn what I need and distill it for others. That's the foundation of the work. Awesome. Yeah. And this is a good recording, so maybe if you want to publish it, I think it would be helpful for a lot of people. I've never really had a conversation in this area before, not even in podcasts. But I think the way we discussed it might be helpful for other people. So if you want to publish it, I think this would be a good thing to publish for people.
So then my question is, how would you want this published?
It's up to you. You can either give me a video and maybe we can throw it on YouTube or something. But I think a conversation like this, as natural as it was, there's a lot of people going through this that I think if they were just able to listen to a very authentic, you know, two-way communication around it, it might be helpful for other folks.
And I think it'll also break the ice in terms of folks, like I always keep saying, right, my friends who feel inadequate. I want them to feel empowered that, hey, we have a certain skill set, you know, we don't have
a very valuable skill set. It's the one that actually sets me apart from many of my peers, is the fact that I wrote a book, that I maintain Kubernetes the hard way on GitHub.
Fact
that I present
everybody talks about it,
right? But all that's technical writing. Is that not technical writing?
That is, but that's coming like from a technical, like it's coming from Kelsey Hightower.
Yeah, but that,
right?
Yeah, but I think honestly, the fact that that's the tool, that's the medium. I mean, I'm not actually as good as most people at technical writing. I have to struggle to do it, right? So that's why I respect the skill.
It's really important for us, for them to hear this. So I'll do that. Thanks a lot, Kelsey. Thank you so much for your time. Love talking to you. Take
awesome.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sartastic Beast and Where to Find Them. The intro and outro music is by Yaakov Goldman, courtesy of Free Music Archive.